Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, this August the 8th, 2014. As I always like to say, it's great to catch up with you at the end of the week and, in fact, play the game of catch-up. And certainly there's been an awful lot going on in the world. The focus this evening, as usual, will be immigration, but in terms of national security and really in terms of what really needs to be done so that our government lives up to that lofty ideal of being the government of the people, by the people, for the people. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that under the creation of DHS, the supposed Department of Homeland Security, I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, the mission of immigration, now, of course, supposedly falling to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, and an agency known as Homeland Security Investigations, which is a spinoff of ICE. Interestingly, that agency was supposed to be just a small little organization, and it's grown in size, and not uncoincidentally, or not coincidentally, perhaps, the word immigration was left out of its title because this administration, aided and abetted by politicians from both sides of the aisle, don't want our immigration laws enforced. And we're going to get into that. But in any event, I want to tell you about two websites. You're probably familiar with them, but if you're not, I would very much like for you to check out my own website, michaelcutler.net. I'm going to take a wild guess that if you're listening to my program, then you've probably gone to my website, hopefully. If you haven't, please check it out. It has a bunch of my commentaries on there, articles. It's a good resource for information. The other website that I'm going to talk about is CAPSWeb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. I've been writing for CAPS for quite a few years now. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great people trying to get the message out there, but you need to understand that although the name is Californians for Population Stabilization, they are addressing issues that are not just specific to California, certainly immigration being one of them. Great website, good bunch of writers. My latest article is out there talking about the need for our Congress to adapt a sort of Hippocratic oath for themselves. You know, first do no harm, or I will keep them, for the doctors, it's the patients, for our Congress, keep them free from harm and injustice. And boy, there's so much injustice and so many lies and so much nonsense flowing. And that's why I do this program. Because, by the way, capsweb.org is their website, if I did not mention it, forgive me. It's been a long week. You know, the reason for this program is to cover the issues that the mainstream media are refusing to really cover the way they should. There are a couple of exceptional places, although Fox News has had me on several times in the past month or so. One American News Network, Newsmax TV have both had me on almost on a weekly basis where I Skype from home, the miracles of computers, to try to provide the perspectives. And that's what's so increasingly difficult, this deceptive language, the falsehoods that we're hearing from the media as well as from the politicians. The truth is a very difficult commodity for us to seem to come by these days. It just seems that every time we hear things about immigration, we hear things about other topics, the hardest commodity to find is the truth. And so here's where we now stand, trying to sort things out, trying to find out what's really going on, what's being done, not so much for us, but to us. Let's consider the ongoing crisis on the Mexican border. First of all we keep hearing about is we're going to secure the border. And if you look at the attempts at border security, the way it's defined is beyond belief. Because what they talk about, and these are the guys that are trying to be tough on it, is the need to have 90% operational control over the high traffic areas. What in the world does that even mean? 90% operational control over high traffic areas. what does an area have to do to be high traffic? How many people have to have tried to get through there in the last month, year, hour? I mean, what are the metrics? What are the metrics? And that's really wherein lies the issue. Why not simply say the border will be made secure, period? You know, everything has a caveat, and I don't blame the people that came up with it, because there are some good people in Congress that really want to get the job done, really want the laws enforced. But understand how difficult it is to do anything when you have so many members of Congress from both parties talking about immigration reform, not immigration enforcement. Have you ever heard the leadership of either political party use the term immigration enforcement? No, absolutely not. What you hear is reform. And what's remarkable is that it's about a change. It's about change. It's not about securing the borders and enforcing the laws that are supposed to protect us. The word reform means change. So what is it that they're trying to change? For example, they talk about the, according to the dictionary, reform is the action or process of reforming or changing an institution or practice. Change. President Obama promised us change, and boy, did we get change, didn't we? Now you've got political leaders promising us immigration reform, immigration change. What is it that they want to change? If you look at the immigration laws, which up until, I would guess, the Nixon administration seemed to do a decent job of more or less controlling the amount of people coming into the country, lived up to most of its responsibilities about protecting Americans from foreign nationals whose presence would be harmful, the changes that the laws have undergone since then, the lack of enforcement is what got us into the mess that we're in now. People running the border, what do we need to reform to change that? All you need to do is enforce the law. This is now Speed Week in New York City, New York State. In fact, it's been all over the radio. I was in Manhattan today driving along, and at least every 10, 15 minutes, the news reporter was saying, remember, folks, this is Speed Week in New York, and it doesn't mean you're allowed to speed. It means that the New York State Police are cracking down on speeders and aggressive drivers. And last week, they issued 25,000 summonses. Well, what do they say in that statement? What they're saying in that statement is because people are driving too quickly, people are driving recklessly, it's a safety issue, we're going to crack down, we're going to make it clear that we're going to be out there, and we're going to find you if you break the law, and there will be consequences. When was the last time you heard the federal government under any president, not just this president, has taken this to a whole different level completely, but when was the last time, as the immigration problem grew bigger and bigger, did you ever hear a president stand before the cameras and say, you know, we've got too many illegal aliens in the country, obviously the law is being ignored. We're going to get the attention of those who would ignore the law by finding them and punishing them. That's usually what happens. Every year, before the IRS, before April 15th gets going, the IRS comes out and says, you know what? We're going to crack down. We're going to arrest people who are tax cheats. You don't, you know, you lie on your tax returns. You do certain things. We're going to arrest you. And every year, first week in April, last week in March, you see all these people, you know, some of them professionals, who swindled or tried to swindle the IRS. And there they are in handcuffs, standing in front of a judge facing criminal charges for lying about, you know, income, the guy that was running a business and didn't report the income and so forth, and they go after them. Well, why are they doing it? They're doing it to set a message. They're sending the message that if you lie, if you violate the tax law, if we don't get the money from you, we're going to get it one way or the other. We've seen actors get hauled into court and charged with tax fraud, all sorts of people. They do it because they want the public to, what Nancy Pelosi, my goodness, what an individual she is, what she referred to as a climate of fear, where it was involving illegal aliens, when she stood in Mexico 10 years ago, incredibly, said that immigration agents were creating a climate of fear for immigrants. Well, immigration agents weren't creating a climate of fear for immigrants so much as they were creating a climate of deterrence when they enforced the law. And that's what the IRS does. That's what the New York State Police is doing right now with speeders. If you speed, we will find you. There will be punishment. There will be consequences. And that's designed to keep people on the level. Let them understand there will be repercussions. Things will happen to you if you do something that's illegal. The immigration laws are designed to keep aliens out of the United States, not based on race, religion, or ethnicity, but based on keeping out aliens with dangerous diseases. Dangerous communicable diseases is the first item on the list of grounds by which aliens are to be prevented from entering the United States. And I want you to think about something. The Ebola outbreak in Africa is picking up steam. It's apparently of historic proportions right now, the number of people infected, the number of people who have died. And we're hearing from the government, well, you know, when people come through that port of entry, we're scrutinizing them, we're making sure they're not sick. Great. Who scrutinizes aliens who avoid the scrutiny of the inspections process by running our borders? You know, don't ask, don't tell, don't see, don't know. I mean, what's the phrase we're supposed to use? So on the one hand, our government is saying, oh, everything is under control. If anyone tries to come into the United States and they're exhibiting evidence of illness, we're going to immediately pull them aside and check them out. When I was an inspector, I did that. That was part of the job. We worked with public health. But when you have aliens coming into the country, or even U.S. citizens that might be smuggling aliens in, so they're avoiding the inspections process, who's checking them out? This is a threat to the lives of Americans. It's a threat that is obvious, but yet no one's talking about it particularly. But that's what the immigration process is about, making certain that we don't let in aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, that we don't let aliens into the United States who are severely mentally ill and prone to extreme violence, or aliens who are sex offenders, convicted felons, and that includes murderers, robbers, arsonists, gang members, gun runners, human traffickers, drug smugglers. They're to be kept out. Aliens who pose a threat to national security, spies, terrorists, human rights violators, and war criminals. All grounds for excluding an alien from the United States. And then, of course, we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, and aliens who would work illegally, thereby interfering with American workers, either displacing American workers or driving down the wages of American workers, because these individuals would be applying downward pressure on wages simply by flooding the labor market. So what do they want to reform? Is there any category, for example, of excludable alien that I've mentioned that you would disagree with? We admit over 1 million lawful immigrants every year. Ted Cruz, by the way, wants to change the law, which is interesting. Everyone says he's a conservative. Ted Cruz wants the law to change so that we admit 2 million lawful immigrants every year, doubling the number of lawful immigrants, including family-based immigration. Why? Ted Cruz wants immigration law to be reformed so that instead of allowing about 65,000 H-1B high-tech visa workers to come here on temporary visas, he wants a 500% increase, bringing it up to 325,000. The Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill that actually passed in the Senate but did not pass in the House would have tripled the number of H-1B visas. Now, there's some reform. Those are the changes. How does this help Americans? And we're so foolish as a nation in terms of our people that no one's listening to what's being said to us. No one's deceiving us in terms of not telling us. No one's listening. Of course, the media doesn't report on it, but you got to do your homework, folks. You know, my fundamental premise is that you cannot be a good parent or a good grandparent if you are not politically active. Responsible parents send their children to good schools. Well, why do they do that? So that the child will grow up to have a bright future. A college education used to be the key to membership in America's middle class, which is now, of course, going the way of the dodo bird. Well, if you are so concerned about your child's future that you go through the expense and bother, and it's a very big expense very often, of sending that child to a university, but you're not paying attention to what the politicians are doing, they will deprive your kid the opportunity to be successful once he or she gets out of college. And now there are student loan bills likely to have to be paid off that look more like mortgage payments. So the obvious question here is, why are the American people not paying attention? There are political demonstrations, and very often people don't show up. You need to start showing up. You need to get involved. There's an election coming. You need to educate yourself so that you understand what the politicians are truly saying. Understand the little words and phrases with the wink, wink. Comprehensive reform, what are we reforming? That's the question you need to ask. Comprehensive reform, are you looking at the 9/11 Commission findings and recommendations? Because the 9/11 Commission made it clear that immigration was where the ability came for the terrorists sent to the United States, the failures in the immigration system. The 9/11 Commission staff report talked about these issues. But if you're not out there making the point to these elected representatives that you have educated yourself, that you are onto them, that you are concerned about what they're trying to do, then they know they can get away with it. They know that the coast is clear because the American people are too busy watching Dancing with the Stars, too busy watching baseball in the summertime and football in the wintertime and basketball the rest of the time. This is far more important than any of that stuff. This is about the survival of America. And if you were watching the news today, there's growing concern about ISIS operating in Iraq. The United States is now launching humanitarian missions to send food to a bunch of Iraqis, a Christian minority group who have now stranded themselves on a mountain trying to get away from these murderers. It almost reminds me of the story of the Israelis in Masada thousands of years ago. They are on a mountain with no food, no water, no nothing, and if it weren't for the supplies being dropped by airplanes to them, they would die. That's how serious the threat is. If you watch the programs today, they're describing ISIS is making Al-Qaeda not look so bad. And they have money, they have equipment, they have seized American weaponry. It's a very dangerous group. And one of the comments made on the radio earlier this morning, or earlier today, were concerns that some of these members of ISIS are traveling on U.S. or European passports. European passports are an issue because when aliens come from countries in Europe, they don't need visas to come to the United States. We've taken down the visa requirement for 38 countries. It's incredible. If you go to the 9/11 Commission report, it talks about how easily the terrorists were able to get visas by lying on their applications. And one of the big recommendations was to crack down on the visa issuance process. A visa doesn't guarantee an alien entry into the United States, but it should be thought of as kind of like the ticket of admission into that inspection booth at the port of entry. And for the first 4 years of my 30-year career with the old Immigration Service, I sat in one of those booths at Kennedy International Airport. So if an alien needed a visa and didn't have one, they didn't get in, they didn't get on an airplane. The visa requirement can even keep terrorists off of airplanes. Richard Reid was the shoe bomber. He was a citizen of Great Britain, didn't need a visa. So he was able to get on that airplane. The 20th hijacker, Massawi, came from France, same deal, didn't need a visa. Those individuals could have been kept off of airplanes, could have been more easily prevented from trying to enter the United States if visas were required. And when I was an inspector way back when, aliens from Europe required visas. Aliens from Canada did not, or landed immigrants in Canada who came from Great Britain did not need visas. Everybody else did. Everybody else did. And the Chamber of Commerce and all these travel hospitality industry people, oh, no, this is slowing down. We have a couple of empty extra seats on those airplanes. We have a couple of hotel rooms that are vacant. Make it easier for people to come here. Well, fine, I understand they want more customers. I understand that. But do you really want more customers when the risk is to our safety? And for the people in the travel and hospitality industry, they're being so greedy that they're not even considering their own well-being. Think back to 9/11. Think back to how few hotel rooms were actually occupied, how many airplanes were flying with lots of empty seats because nobody wanted to get on an airplane. If, God forbid, there's another massive terrorist attack, between the impact it would have on the economy, the impact it's likely to have on travel and recreation is staggering. The industries most vulnerable are the industries that are pushing the hardest to take down the barriers that are supposed to protect us against terrorists. This is rampant greed without the capability of thinking beyond tomorrow's earnings statement. That's really what we're witnessing. It makes no sense. Greed-driven decisions are never good decisions. I understand the desire for profitability, but not when you're endangering the lives of people around the world. And that's exactly what's happening. By the way, if you want to call in, join the conversation, the phone number is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. So what I'm trying to convey to you is the fact that these are the issues not being discussed on television or radio by most of the newscasters. And then even the very bright folks that are on TV who generally know what they're talking about, as soon as they get to immigration, start making statements that don't square with reality, but nobody seems to get it. How many times have you heard one of these folks on television say, well, if an alien has been living in the United States for 5 years, paying his or her taxes, never been arrested, then there's no reason we should make them leave? Here's the problem. How do you know how long someone's been living here if, number one, you're dealing with so many applications, and if they do comprehensive reform, you could be talking, I don't believe, 11 to 12 million. I think it will be the same situation we saw back in 1986, where the official estimate of illegal aliens ran to about a million or a little more. We wound up with between 3.5 and 4 million. If we have three times as many illegal aliens as we're being told there are, the way it happened in 1986, then we are looking at a population in excess of 30 million. 30 million. How do you process 30 million applications in any kind of a timely way? And what you should also understand is that it takes just minutes to approve an application, but it can take days or weeks to deny an application, because to deny it, you have to conduct an investigation, you have to gather the evidence, you have to write a report, and then the report gets submitted to the attorneys so they check for legal sufficiency, and then it gets sent out, and most likely the alien in question will hire a lawyer, and the lawyer will challenge it, and so around and round it goes, and meanwhile the alien gets to stay in the United States while this is all going on. If you're trying to get rid of the backlog, the easiest thing is to just stamp it yes, and the alien's home free, literally. So this idea that we're going to run these applications through any kind of scrutiny is absurd. It would be more like Lucy at the Bon Bon Factory on steroids, if you remember that hilarious episode of I Love Lucy, where Lucy and Ethel can't keep up with the candy coming at them on a conveyor belt, and the belt keeps going faster, and they can't wrap all the candy, so they start eating it and shoving it down their clothing. Well, that's pretty much the plight of the adjudicators at Citizenship and Immigration Services. So what we're really talking about is that aliens will know what words they need to put on the application to get what they want. You know, during the during Prohibition, the people were told, well, if you want to go down and get some booze, you go to this club in the basement somewhere, and you knock on the door and tell them Charlie sent you, you know, the magic word, the guy's name or whatever. The magic word would then be, well, I've been here for 5 years, the magic word. Whatever they're told, they have to say. And in fact, a number of years ago, interesting story, I was being driven into one of the TV studios to do an interview. It may have been Fox, perhaps not. This is several years ago. And they always send a limousine for you, a car service with a, you know, a Lincoln Town Car kind of thing. And I'm sitting in the back of the car, and I'm speaking with the driver, who has a very heavy Arabic accent. I believe he was from either Lebanon or Iraq. And I asked him how long he'd been in the United States, and he said, oh, I've been here for, you know, 25, 30 years, whatever it was. And he told me that he had come here because of the amnesty of 1986. And he said the way that he got to be part of amnesty was by claiming that he worked on a farm. And I said, you claim you worked on a farm? Did you? He said, of course not. But everybody knew that if you said you worked on a farm, then they would give you permission to stay in the United States. So he said because he claimed to have worked on the farm and got away with it, his whole family was here, all of his brothers and all of their wives and all of their children and his own wife and his own kids. And he told me that he had brought in about 30 people altogether. By lying on an application, I didn't get into it with him. But I was infuriated, as you might imagine. But understand that he told me he thought it was a joke. He said because everybody knew that if you wanted to come to America, you had to give a certain date by which you had come here. And you also, the easiest thing to do is to say, I worked on a farm. Look at the 9/11 Commission report, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. One of the individuals who's participated in the bombing at the World Trade Center in 1993 that killed 6 people and injured over 1,000 people, caused almost about a half billion dollars in damage, was a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima, who had claimed to have picked beans on a farm in Florida. Never did that. The closest he ever came to a farm was when he drove his taxi cab past Central Park. And the closest he ever came to planting anything was when he planted the bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. So his lie went undetected, and he participated in a very serious terrorist attack that, had it succeeded, would have created even more casualties than the terror attacks of 9/11. And the outrage is that everybody understood that the 93 attacks were carried out by aliens who had gamed the process, and yet the Clinton administration did nothing at all to address illegal immigration or a lack of security where the visa process or the immigration benefits process was concerned. On May 20th, 1997, I testified at a congressional hearing before the House Subcommittee on Immigration. And what was the hearing about? Visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. And the reason for the hearing was the terrorist attack of 1993 in January by a guy by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani national, who claimed political asylum, and then went to the CIA one morning in January 1993 with an AK-47, opened fire, killed 2 CIA officers and wounded 3 others. But then he did what international terrorists and transnational criminals are able to do. He left the country. They have an escape hatch. Except in Kansi's case, because of the nature of his crime, our military tracked him down, brought him back here. He was put on trial, found guilty, subsequently executed, but the people he killed remained dead. Understand how we've left the door open, literally and figuratively, to the criminals, to the terrorists, to the drug traffickers, to disease. We're seeing outbreaks of resistant tuberculosis. We're seeing outbreaks of polio. We thought we eradicated it. And now we've got this massive wave of humanity coming across the southwest border of the United States. The horror stories are amazing. Some of the people working there, even though they're under extreme threat of not only being fired but possibly being criminally prosecuted, isn't it great to work for a transparent administration? Don't tell the American people that we're letting people in who might pose a threat to their survival. That's not the kind of secret you keep because of concerns about national security. I understand the need to keep national security material secret. I had a top secret clearance as an agent. I agree. I look at Snowden and I see a mixed bag. I certainly am disgusted by what I heard about the NSA doing, but on the other hand, for Snowden to go to Russia and give them the information that he apparently gave them, very disturbing. So I understand the need for state secrets. But it shouldn't be a state secret when the government of the United States is screwing over its own people. Those secrets, so-called, aren't designed to protect us. In fact, they do quite the opposite. They hurt us and hurt us big time. But they are designed to protect the elite in the administration. This is insanity. But even with that, you have these brave souls coming forward and saying, you know something? There's something terrible going on here. We have gang members coming into the United States. They're sporting gang tattoos, these so-called children. Please realize something, folks. I have a very soft spot in my heart. I'm a parent. my grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother. And I want to see us be compassionate, but not where what we think of as compassion is seen as a vulnerability that terrorists or international criminals or transnational gang members can exploit as a vulnerability. Our kindness should never be turned against us as a weapon. So this notion that we have all these people being processed and being turned loose, and you see these stories repeatedly now about the people that are working with these aliens coming down with diseases, Chagas and tuberculosis and so forth, is very worrying. Very worrying. Because this is not what our government is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And you have members of Congress, Pelosi and Reid on the one hand. Then on the other hand, you have people like Ted Cruz wanting a 200% increase, twice the number of legal immigrants and a 500% increase in high-tech workers. It's insanity. You have people talking about the need to educate foreign students in the United States and then staple green cards onto their diplomas. We heard that from Mitt Romney. So stop and think about what we're hearing. Let's put these pieces together. A little critical thinking is in order here. On the one hand, we're told that the reason we need to import foreign workers is because we aren't turning out students who can do the job in the United States because our education is inferior. And because our education isn't so good, we need to bring in foreign workers. Then we're told, on the other hand, when foreign students are educated in the United States, we shouldn't be making them leave. Well, who's educating them if we're on the one hand being told that the educational system in the United States fails to give people good competitive educations? Do you see the way that we're being lied to and gamed? You can't, on the one hand, say American students can't take the jobs because they don't have the right education, and then in the next sentence talk about how we need to allow aliens who are educated in the United States stay here because we desperately need them for their skills and education. How is it that the aliens acquire a good education in the same schools that American kids can't seem to get a good education in? Does anybody pay attention to this contradiction? It's a lie. It's a lie, it's a mistruth, and it's designed to change fundamentally the way immigration does business. Alan Greenspan has repeatedly talked about it. And on April 30th, 2009, he stood before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee in the Senate, and he talked about the need to open up the quotas and bring in all the foreign workers because American workers and were getting this wage premium. See, it's not their salary, it's this premium they're earning. I guess they get two paychecks, and he just wanted to eliminate the premium check. It's a lie. He talked about the need to greatly reduce income inequality, and that's a remarkable concept. And if you watch programs on TV, John Oliver, the Brit, I believe he's a Brit who hosts this hilarious show, or supposed to be hilarious show on cable television, Last Week Tonight, a couple of weeks ago, did a whole big routine, spent half of his 30 minutes talking about wage inequality. Wage inequality. How outrageous is it that these corporate executives are making all this money? We got to go after wage inequality. And I'm a capitalist. Pretty outrageous that you do have CEOs that are making over 500 times more than their workers. In the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was typical for a CEO to make 50, 55 times. Now it's 550 times. So the disparity in wages has increased by tenfold. And that's happening because each person on the board of directors sits on everyone else's board of directors, so they vote for each other. Remuneration isn't set by the stockholders, but set by the board of directors. And so each guy sits on the other guy's board. So I vote for you, you vote for me. Charlie wants a new jet, corporate jet. And Barbara wants a $10 million raise, so behind the scenes they shake hands, they make a deal, and it's Monty, let's make a deal. I want door number one, and she wants door number two, and everybody's happy. Except, of course, then the money isn't being reinvested back into the company to keep the company competitive. The workers aren't getting the pay that they should be getting, and the investor isn't getting the return on the investment that he or she should be getting, and the company, meanwhile, has been offshored, so they're not paying any U.S. taxes. There's things that are really wrong. This is really collusion, and it's nuts. So people get it. When they hear this kind of business, they say, well, right, we've got to restore wage equality. We've got to reduce wage inequality. But, you know, before we get on elevators, we either look at the little light over the door or we'll ask the people who are already on the elevator going up or going down, because we don't want to go in the wrong direction. People are jumping on this elevator of wage equality, but no one's asking if the elevator is going up or down. Because what Greenspan's idea of wage equality is has nothing to do with giving middle-class workers more money and reducing the disparity in wages between the middle-class workers and the executives, the CEOs, the CFOs, and the senior vice presidents. Oh, no. He's talking about reducing the difference in wages between America's poor and America's middle class. The elevator is most decidedly going down. But everyone jumped on the elevator, and nobody asked, which way is the elevator going? So the buzzword is wage equality, wage equality. Well, who do they want to make more equal? The answer is they want to make America's middle-class workers more equal to America's poor. And believe me, there isn't much talk about raising wages for the poor other than to talk about the middle class, minimum wage, which if Mr. Greenspan and Zuckerberg and Gates and all those other characters had their way, the minimum wage would become the standard wage. So we have wage equality so that people earning minimum wage would not be less fortunate, quote-unquote, in parentheses, as people having the high-tech, high-skill jobs. That's what they're talking about when they talk about reform. Now, what's interesting is I was on a program yesterday, and I was listening to an ad they ran, and it was a Huckabee News bite or one-minute survey, or I'm not sure what Governor Huckabee's little thing was on this radio network that I was on. But they said that most Americans are not just of the opinion now that the government isn't representing their best interests, but that the government is creating their problems. Well, we're on our way to problem solving, folks. We are on the way to solving the problems and figuring it out finally. You know, Abraham Lincoln used to say you can fool all the people all the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. We're at that last stage. You can't fool all the people all the time. So if you read between the lines, you hear how they're talking about, well, there's concerns that terrorists could come here. Why then are we not being more careful with how we admit people into the United States? If there are concerns that aliens could get residency in the United States and U.S. passports, why aren't we tightening up the process by which we adjudicate applications for immigration benefits? These are recommendations from the 9/11 Commission. Yes, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, but I was one of many people who spoke to them. And these were some of the things that we advised them on, and they came to agree with us. And 2 weeks ago was the 10th anniversary of the issuance of the 9/11 Commission report. And yet all the issues that they addressed, where immigration is concerned, everything was ignored. In fact, we are more at risk today than we were on September 10th, 2001. And we're told that we need to reform the system. We're told that we need to have wage equality. And what's behind all those words is a desire to swindle highly qualified, highly experienced, highly skilled, hardworking American workers out of their paycheck. This is three-card Monte. It's being run by this administration and aided and abetted by the Republicans, because think of how wonderful it is for the Republican Party. And I want to make a distinction. Not all Republicans. Not all Republicans. Senator Jeff Sessions is my hero. I wish he would run for president, and I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. Congressman Lou Barletta is a personal friend and a true leader, a true hairy-chested leader. Steve King, again, on the immigration issue, Steve does amazing work. David Vitter, same deal. Chuck Grassley, and isn't it remarkable how the IRS started to look at Chuck Grassley? He's one of the most senior members of the United States Senate. In fact, Chuck Grassley invited me to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee a year ago this past March on how to make the immigration system truly work for America and Americans. Of course, the other witnesses that were provided by the Democrats were on the opposite side of the argument. So it's not about individual politicians. You got to be careful. Pick and choose. We've got those heroes that we need desperately to stay in Washington. But the Republican Party, when you can listen to John Boehner and the others talking about immigration reform, well, you know, once we secure the border. Really? Why is that? Why are we only concerned about once we secure the border? I wrote an article for Front Page magazine, and I've become a columnist for Front Page, as well as another relatively new magazine, American Currency, C-U-R-R-E-N-T-S-E-E, Currency. It's a publication of the Washington Times, and the founder of that publication is Dr. Ben Carson. Its editor is my friend Armstrong Williams, who is providing me with an incredible opportunity. I will be doing a one-hour a week Sirius XM radio program with him starting in September on Wednesday evenings, as we now plan it, 7 o'clock East Coast time. I will have an hour every week on the air. Thank you, Armstrong Williams. And we will focus on the issues on that program much the same way I do on this program. So I wrote an article for Front Page magazine, which is, of course, the site of the David Horowitz Freedom Center organization, and I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. And not calendar, but colander, you know, that bowl with the holes in it that we use to drain pasta. And what I meant by border security and the immigration colander is that we're being told that if we kind of plug one of the holes in the bottom of that colander, and not even really completely or very effectively perhaps, that once we do that, we can now use the colander as a bucket to carry water. If that isn't the silliest notion you ever heard, that's what we're being told. Once we secure the Mexican border, never mind that 40% of the illegal aliens in the United States aren't coming by running the border, but they're entering through ports of entry and then violating the terms of their admission, overstaying their visas, working illegally, committing felonies that they get convicted for, which also render them deportable. No, we're not talking about that. Never mind that aliens might run the Canadian border. We're not talking about that. Never mind that aliens might stow away on ships and then sneak into the United States. We're not talking about that. We're just going to focus on the Mexican border, and we'll make it kind of sort of secure in those high traffic areas, and now the sun's going to shine and the guys won't need Viagra. And if you believe that story, I have a fence to sell you. Because the goal is not to prevent illegal immigration. No one uses those terms. The goal is to secure the Mexican border, the U.S.-Mexican border. And we ignore all the other failures. No one's talking about the failures whereby fraud in the Immigration Benefits Program, which, by the way, was identified by the 9/11 Commission as a threat to national security. There's nothing in comprehensive reform that talks about going after the fraud of hiring more agents. No, what they tell us is we're going to secure the border. And then what? And then we'll reform the law. How will we reform the law? Well, if Mr. Cruz gets his way, we will double the number of legal immigrants. I like Eric Bolling over at Fox News. He's interviewed me. But his suggestion is we should have 3 or 4 million legal immigrants entering the United States every year. I want to know why. I want to know why. Are we not adequately congested? Are there not parts of the country that are experiencing enough water shortages or enough problems finding work or getting children educated, or dealing with the sick? We are overflowing. And that's one of the issues that Californians of population stabilization has done a very good job of addressing, talking about the impact that this is all having. Obviously, when they get into these quality of life issues, it's more about California. If you go to the website, in fact, they note that 98% of California's population growth is attributable to the influx of aliens. So that's what they want to reform. Why? Why in the world do we somehow think we need to take many more people into the United States when we already have over 100 million Americans who aren't being counted when they come up with those BS unemployment statistics. 6.2% unemployment, but we ignore the plight of 100 million Americans. And then, of course, they say, well, these are Americans who aren't looking for work. How do they know? Do you think they're calling these 100 million people up and saying, Mr. Smith, are you looking for work? Of course they're not. It's nonsense. It's utter BS. They have no idea. But they're making these statements because it sounds good. The immigrants are doing the work Americans won't do. Yeah, because they're willing to work for below minimum wage, off the books. They're willing to work in hellholes of jobs. I know because I used to raid the factories before most of those factories were moved overseas. But when they do have factories here and they intentionally hire the illegals, generally it's because the conditions are nothing short of draconian. So the immigrants are doing the work Americans won't do. You know, every study shows American workers are the hardest working, most industrious. There was a recent study that said that foreign high-tech workers are not to be compared to Americans. Americans are more productive, more industrious, get the patents that the foreign workers never get. But there is an advantage to hiring a foreign worker, and now we're talking about the H-1Bs, when they're not committing fraud and not even showing up on the job, which happens for far more often than you could imagine. But it's that they work for much less money. So if all you care about is your bottom line and you're nothing better than locusts traveling from company to company, looting these companies and committing what I call legalized embezzlement, then, of course, you keep on repeating the lie, we hire these foreign workers because we just can't find Americans. Americans don't have the ability. Americans aren't conscientious. Any politician who sides with these corporations needs to be sent packing. And it's funny because Bill Maher was on this week and he had Ralph Nader on, and Ralph Nader was talking about some of these corporate practices. And I'm a liberal on most issues, folks. I'm certainly a liberal on the plight of the American worker. I'm a blue-collar guy in my heart of hearts. My dad, who was a construction worker, a tradesman, a plumber, will always be my biggest hero. He died when I was 19, in part because he worked in the Navy shipyard during the Second World War and was exposed to asbestos both there and on the work site, where he came to work after the war, and his three-pack-a-day Chesterfield habit. I used to call those cigarettes little blowtorches. But my dad back then and construction workers today, coal miners, blue-collar Americans, are the most productive and hardest-working people on the planet. You go by that construction site on a 100-degree day, and you see those guys out there busting their tails and getting the job done. You go by those construction sites when it's 3 degrees outside, and you'll see the same thing. They might have icicles hanging off their hard hats, but damn it, they're out there doing the job. So what is it about? It's about importing huge numbers of foreign workers who undermine American workers. It's about bringing in foreign students so that they can get the tuition at these universities. And while we're on the topic of these schools, what you may not know that you need to know is that these schools right now number over 9,000 schools eligible to bring foreign students in. 9,000. Do you think we even know if these schools exist? Time and again, there'll be a little blurb in the news. Oh, yes, we shut down a school. One school out of 9,000 plus. We have over 1 million foreign students studying in the United States. Do we even know if they're studying? No. The schools are supposed to report to immigration when they fail to show. And when they fail to show, the alarm bells ring, and the doors swing open, and nobody goes anywhere at immigration because they don't care. They're not looking to arrest students who failed to show up for school. It's insane. If you want to talk about an open-door policy, our country doesn't even have doors on the hinges any longer. And this administration has taken the hinges off, the doors off the hinges. But yet, what you hear as the official tagline from the Republicans is, well, the president's not doing his job. The president is doing this and that and the other thing wrong. But once we get the border secure, if you hear that come out of a politician's mouth, you know the politician is a flat-out liar. The immigration system has many moving components, and every one of those moving components has an implication for national security and public safety and for the well-being of American workers and their families. That's how the immigration laws used to serve America and Americans. It was by enforcing those laws that America built the middle class and with it the American dream. Today, the only time you hear about the American dream is the DREAM Act. Isn't it remarkable? Isn't it remarkable that if you go anywhere and talk about immigration and use the word alien, the other side will accuse you of unbelievable bigotry, hatred. Oh, my God, he said alien. But you know what's so funny, folks? The A in DREAM Act is alien. It's remarkable that they were so determined to link the image of the American dream to people who violate our borders with the American dream. So they said, oh, well, we have to use the word alien then. But only use it that one time. Don't you dare use it any other time. And then, of course, the accusations all start that this is about being anti-immigrant and that we are anti-immigrant for wanting the laws secured. So just think about this. If someone says to you that it's anti-immigrant to want the laws enforced and pro-immigrant to not want the laws enforced, here's the response. America's immigration laws are balanced. They not only tell us who to kick out and who to keep out, but who to let in. When we talk about an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence, that's the legal jargon for a lawful immigrant, an alien with a green card, an alien on the path to citizenship, and we admit roughly a million a year. Lawfully admitted. What does that mean? Think about it. The laws that they're complying with are the immigration laws that we want to see enforced. How in the world is it anti-immigrant to be supportive of the laws whereby immigrants are admitted into the United States? The other side has been very good at turning language sideways because they know that the law, the facts, common sense, and morality all run contrary to their position. The only hope they have for succeeding is in manipulating the language. In a debate, control of language is the equivalent of control of the high ground where the military is concerned. If you can control the language, you can win the debate. We've got to be very careful with the use of language. It is not pro-immigrant to want to let everybody in and give everybody a green card and so forth. It's anti-immigrant because now we're talking about people coming into the United States who may well pose a threat to the people that they live among. And who do you think the illegal aliens live among? Generally, it's people from similar countries or the same country that they came from, of the same ethnicity, where they like the same food, the same music, they have the same language, and they enjoy the companionship of the young ladies and so forth from those same countries. And while we're on the topic of those young ladies, what I observed as an agent in 30 years was that when you have a large population of illegal aliens, unaccompanied men, it leads to prostitution, it leads to the exploitation of women, it leads to tremendous suffering and humiliation and crime and violence, and so it goes. But of course, when you are mega wealthy and you live in a mansion in some remote area and you have a whole team of gun-toting bodyguards, you don't much care about what goes on in the engine room of the ship. You know, they're up there on the sun deck, and everyone else is down below deck working their tails off for them. You know, there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. I'm all about being successful and being an entrepreneur, and I think we should let people in that do that. Elon Musk is a great example. He started PayPal, then he started SpaceX, and the Tesla car company. The guy's unbelievable. He's a one-man army. He came to the United States from South Africa through Canada. He is an asset for America. So the system worked, didn't it? We allow people like Elon Musk to come here, and we should. We'd be darn fools if we didn't. But you cannot tell me that you're going to find 325,000 exceptional people who are dying to come to the United States. Doesn't work. It's a lie, And it's a lie that's designed to drive down the wages for American workers and even displace American workers. Anybody who tells you that we need to import the best and brightest needs to be sent packing. Because you know what, ladies and gentlemen? There is a term for America's best and brightest. I don't know what you think, but to me, the world's best and brightest are called Americans. And we're going to prove that we are the best and brightest when we remove from office politicians who don't stand with us. That's the work Americans must do. Election day's coming. Election day's coming. We keep hearing about term limits. We can impose term limits in the voting booth. Any politician who thinks that it's appropriate to displace American hardworking individuals with foreign workers needs to lose his job. That's what happened to Eric Cantor. The guy was supposedly untouchable. The Republican majority leader in the House of Representatives, he had a ton of money in his war chest, he had a ton of political backing, and he went bye-bye. And as far as I'm concerned, he won't be missed. He will not be missed. He came out in support of the Enlist Act. Denham's brilliant brain fart. Senator, or rather Congressman Denham from California, again, a supposed conservative. See, this isn't about left or right. It's about right or wrong. In fact, I just wrote a very lengthy article, basically a policy position piece for progressives for immigration reform. This is not about left or right, but about right or wrong. So Denham says, oh, let's allow illegal aliens to join the military, and then we can put them on the path to citizenship. Really? You want to take people who snuck into the United States, we can't determine when, and he said, oh, well, they will have participated in the DREAM Act. Well, the DREAM Act allows aliens as old as 31 years of age to step out of the supposed shadows, and then we're giving them, you know, new ID. We don't know who these folks are. And, in fact, when I was on with Neil Cavuto a week ago, Neil was in a state of uproar. I've never seen Neil angrier, because you had all these illegal aliens standing outside the White House marching and making demands, waving signs, proclaiming them to be illegal aliens. So again, another lie. Oh, they're hiding in the shadows. No, they're not hiding in the shadows. They were out in front of the White House demonstrating, demanding what they wanted. And yet their presence represents a violation of our laws. Boy, isn't that a wonderful way to be. My mom came here legally and had such respect for America, had such respect for our laws. Gosh, my first wife who died many years ago, her parents came here after the Holocaust. They'd been in the concentration camps. And they told me how they were scared to death when they had to take the test to naturalize. And they were so thrilled to become U.S. citizens. My dad's father, for whom I was named, Willie Cutler, the first day he was eligible to become a citizen. He became a citizen, immediately said, I don't want to speak Russian out there on the street. I was from Russia. We're Americans. We speak English here. And you contrast that with what we're seeing today. But Denham says, that's okay. We'll let these folks join the military. We'll give them weapons training. We'll give them the American playbook on military tactics, and we'll give them access to our military bases. What could possibly go wrong? And brilliant Cantor came out there and said, I support Denham. And the voters came out and said, well, we don't support you. So he will now have to find a new way to support himself. As far as I'm concerned, Eric, my boy, you got what you deserved. You went against the people you were elected to represent, Eric. So you're gone. For me, you will not be missed. It's time that we had people in Washington who truly stand with their constituents and stand with Americans. I had lunch with Congressman Steve King a number of years ago. I was testifying at a field hearing in Dubuque, Iowa. And after the hearing, Congressman King invited me to lunch. We sat down on the bank of the Mississippi. It was a beautiful day in early September. And I said to him, because he was trying to convince me that I need to move to Iowa because he's a congressman from Iowa. And he said he'd love to have me as one of his fellow Iowans. And I said, I could almost do it because I'd love to have you represent me in Washington. And Steve turned serious, and he said, you know, Mike, you need to have one thing, though, in your mind, much as I want you to come to Iowa. You don't need to live in Iowa for me to be concerned about you or your family as a member of Congress. Because when I vote on bills, I try my best to do what's in the best interests of the greatest majority of the American people. And he does. And I don't always agree with Steve because he's a conservative and I'm not. There are times I disagree with him. But that's America. That's American. The First Amendment is about not only freedom of press, speech, and religion. Everybody rattles those three off. But it's also about the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, do we have a laundry list of those. And it's also about the right for peaceable assemblage so that we could sit down and have the discussions and, if need be, have the arguments, just do it nonviolently. That's exactly what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Donna Fiducia, who I met through the great General Paul Vallely, had been a Fox broadcaster a number of years ago. We've become good friends. I was on her radio show last week. And we got into a real raucous argument, and her husband Don thought it was hysterical. And he didn't bother editing it. We taped it, and it went out as is. Because although it was an argument, we were respectful of each other. We had a strong difference of opinion on some stuff. And not only did it make for interesting radio, but it's really a great example of what America is supposed to be about. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing with your neighbors or your friends. That's in our DNA. That's what America's about, the right to disagree. That doesn't make you my enemy if you disagree with me. It just makes you a fellow American with a different viewpoint. And nobody gets it right 100% of the times. Sometimes if we're willing to keep an open mind and listen to our neighbors, we may learn something. We may find out that we've taken the wrong position on an issue. Nothing wrong with that either. Nothing wrong with it. That's the best way to learn. Ask the questions and approach problems with an open mind. It's in America's best interest. It's in our best interest. We live in a very dangerous era, folks. I'm not telling you anything new. We're being challenged from so many directions simultaneously. We have an administration that disturbs me greatly. But we have members of Congress from both political parties who disturb me as well. That's why we have elections. And that's why we have a democratic republic, and we need to protect and preserve it. And the best way to do it is to become involved in the political process. And that's why I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's always good to join you at the end of the week. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Check out capsweb.org. And I'll throw in a plug for Front Page Magazine, American Currency, and a whole bunch more stuff coming up in the weeks ahead. And I will keep you posted. But meanwhile, I hope all of you have a very wonderful weekend. I'm going to be on with Dr. Jave Janda, Operation Freedom, on the Sunday, this Sunday afternoon. If you go to his website, Dr. Dave Janda, J-A-N-D-A, Operation Freedom, and that's on tap for Sunday. And Monday I'll be on with Charles Butler and Sam Sorbo on their radio programs. So go to my website. You'll be able to keep up with it. And please get involved in the political process. Your elected representatives are lonely. They need to hear from you. And again, as I say, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week, folks. Have a great weekend.